This is the official podcast of the Academy for Women in Academic Emergency Medicine Anniversary Interviews, celebrating 10 years of progress. This is your host, Michelle Lin, and I'm especially excited to bring you the famous Dr. Esther Chu, an associate professor at Oregon Health and Science University and founder of Time's Up Healthcare and Equity Quotient. We talk about how pivotal AWEM mentors and networks were in her own academic career and how so much of the work that's being done now is just laying the groundwork for our vision of true gender equity. Esther, thank you so much for making the time.
My pleasure.
So tell me a little bit about where you are in your career and how it is that you got here.
So I'm an associate professor of emergency medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. I'm primarily research, so I spend about 75 to 80% of my time in research and then the rest on clinical practice and teaching. And then I do a lot of interesting women's development and advocacy work on the side. And I got here by doing a health services research fellowship after residency. And then going from that into a faculty position where I was able to have protected time to apply for a K-23 career development grant from the NIH. I got that and was on it for 5 years and then recently transitioned to an R01 level grant of my own in addition to being a co-investigator on several other similar grants. And I also have a large foundation grant. So I do spend much of my time on both clinical and policy research.
Congratulations, those are tremendous accomplishments. And I think that a lot of the world knows you primarily as an advocate, and you describe yourself primarily as a researcher. Can you elaborate a little bit on those roles and how they interplay?
Yeah, I mean, I think of my core job, my real job, I guess, as being a researcher. So, you know, I think of my kind of 9-to-5 job. It's not really 9-to-5, but the job that I go in and do every day is really being a research scientist. And so that's just what you would think it is. It's a scholarly life and a quiet one. I'm in my office by myself a lot. I work with a few research teams and I work collaboratively with other scholars and do a lot of really interesting work around drug use disorders and policies affecting drug use and clinical outcomes, particularly as it relates to emergency care. So that's that's a really dominant part of my career. And then the other piece that I'm paid for is, of course, to do clinical work. So I'm a nocturnalist. I only work night shifts. And I do that both at OHSU's main ED and also at the VA hospital, which is connected to it. So that's kind of my main job. But I have gotten involved outside my main job in a number of things, mainly to raise awareness of racism and sexism in healthcare. I've also started my own business, which provides metrics and analyses for healthcare organizations to understand how they might better support women in their workplace. And then I'm active on social media, raising awareness of racism and sexism, and I'm involved nationally in a few organizations. So AWAM was a big one for me initially. And then, of course, the natural life cycle for AWAM is to step a little aside and let other people grow into those roles. So as I stepped out of that, I became more involved in an organization called Feminem, which was started by Derek Haas, which has a website and a podcast and a lot of career development resources for women and runs a great annual conference and retreat. So my involvement has really outside my regular workday has really started to revolve around some of these issues of why are certain groups being held back in medicine and what can I do to advocate for them and make it better for them and by extension for their patients.
All right, Esther, so you sound very not busy at all.
It's all good.
And tell me a little bit more about how you came to become involved in AWEM.
It is a random chance as some of these things happen. So I knew vaguely about this meeting of women emergency physicians at one of the SAM meetings, but I was not planning on going because I wanted to go for a run that day. am kind of an obsessive runner, so I skip lots of things that I can make sure and get my run in. And then I saw Gail D'Onofrio, and she was headed there, and she kind of dragged me there. And so I was at AWAM in running clothes, that first meeting. And that was the meeting where, you know, Kathy Clem and Gloria Kuhn and Stephanie Abul and a lot of those senior women who wanted to build a community of women emergency physicians, they all brought us together on that day. And they it was super intimidating. I didn't know anybody in the room, and except for Gail. And so these sheets went around to sign up for committees, and I thought that would be a good way to get to know other women leaders in emergency medicine. So I signed up for a committee, and that's how I got involved, and it kind of just took off from there.
That's wonderful. And what motivated you to then seek a leadership position?
So I didn't really seek a leadership position, but the committee I signed up for was the awards committee, and nobody else signed up for it. So by default, I was the chair, as well as all the members of the awards committee. And so I really wanted to do well by the, you know, for AWAM, because none of these women knew me. And so I really put my heart and soul into that awards committee, and just in doing that work got to know the senior AWAM leadership, and they were the ones who really mentored me into a senior role. And so I think, like many women, when I became vice president and then president-elect and then president, so, you know, I sort of eased into it over a period of years. I felt very not ready for the role initially, and then with their mentorship and guidance and encouragement, I stepped up to the presidency, really not having had a national leadership role before. And so it wasn't something I planned for. I think if it had been a question of asking when I was ready for that, I would have waited like forever, you know, like 10 or 15 years. But because the women encouraged me and felt that I was ready, I went ahead and did it, and it was a very enriching experience.
That's great. And so, in addition to these leadership roles, how has AWAM contributed to your personal career development?
Well, you're always told in your career to network, and I never liked that word. It always felt like a different way of saying be fake and make fake relationships. And I just never felt great about pursuing relationships simply for career advancement. I felt like I wanted true friendships and organic relationships. And I think AWAM gave me a way in which I felt comfortable networking, because I was involved. You spent a lot of time with people; those became friendships and genuine relationships. But they were also people who were in a position to advance your career and give you very good advice. And so it was kind of just the best kind of networking, because it was natural and felt comfortable, and I didn't have to really act differently or do things that I didn't feel comfortable doing. The senior women were there to do what I needed, which is to provide mentoring and sponsorship, you know, really to guide junior women into the kind of experiences that allow you to move forward a little bit and then more in, and attain graduated responsibility until you were in a position to lead in a major way. And so I think it's very difficult to get those experiences from any one person or within your institution, especially as a woman. So AWAM gave me the kind of national networks that allowed me to filter through and find the people who were really good fit mentors for my career.
That's great. So certainly lots of opportunities with regards to mentorship, networking, and leadership experience. Any other specific AWAM initiatives that you felt have had a significant impact in your career or perhaps the careers of others?
Well, it was really the awards committee that made me aware of the disparities in healthcare for women. So the first time I presented awards data to the AWAM leadership was kind of a turning point for me. So what I did was, at the end of my first year leading the awards committee, I did a presentation to the AWAM executive committee and other members who wanted to go to the business meeting. So rather than just talk about the awards, I decided to put together a little presentation. And in order to do that, I decided to look back on all the emergency medicine awards and create a figure of how often they'd been awarded to women. And it was shocking to me how many emergency medicine awards were essentially awards for men that had almost never gone to women, and even awards that had never gone to women over a period of like 25 or 30 years. So that piqued my interest, and that's when I really started looking into the literature about disparities in many other factors for women in medicine, like things like salary and promotion. And you know, when I was president, so I think I was president in 2008, 2009, in around that time period. And is that right? No, that's when AWIM started.
I heard 10-year anniversary.
2013. No, totally. Sorry. 2008 was when the first meeting
but
was.
But it feels like a long time.
It feels like it was 10 years ago. But it was, yeah. So 2013, I was president. And right around that time, or maybe a little bit before that, was kind of when all the literature started coming out about the salary gap. I mean, it really hasn't been that long that we've had the kind of national data we have now about the very persistent physician salary gap. And so it just, all those things came together. I was like reading this awards data, I was like, wow, women are really excluded from things, and there's this big disparity that is so disproportionate to the number of women who have been here for a long time. And so, and then, you know, and then I was reading the salary papers, and I read the promotion papers, and then, you know, and more has come out demonstrating that these, the association between gender and salary is real. I'm sorry, that the association between gender and all these factors that are important in your career were real. And so I think it was, AWAM planted a seed for me that has really grown into a pretty consuming interest, which is what is underneath these disparities for women, and how do we eliminate them?
That's so important. Tell me a little bit about perhaps how this is translated into career advancement based on your own experience.
I think before AWAM, it never occurred to me that I would ever go past assistant professor. I wasn't, I didn't think that I would have that level of attainment in my academic career. And so I think it gave me a lot of confidence. I was meeting women who were full professors and seeing that that was a model that was possible for me. But I mean, I wouldn't say that I was aggressively ambitious in my career ever. Certainly never before I entered that room. And AWIM brought a lot of goals into sight for me that weren't even there for me before. You know, they were not visible to me. They were just weren't on my radar at all. But here were women who I knew well, who had risen to those roles, who seemed mere mortals, you know, and were telling me that I had that potential. So that was very influential for me. And there were actually people I met in AWIM who have given me very specific mentorship with regards to my research career. So I think AWIM has also provided a very reassuring framework for me when I hit the ceiling in medicine, because there are many ways in my career where I still feel like I bump up against the ceiling, that I have failed to progress for a number of factors, including my gender, at least compared to, you know, to male peers of similar backgrounds. And it's been very psychologically helpful to understand that this is not unique to me, that this happens to all women, and also to go back to AWAM and develop some skills and resources to try to negotiate those barriers. But I will say that for me, the fight to continue to advance my career in academia is one that has made me look outside academia. You know, so that's why I started a business. That's why I'm involved in a couple of nonprofit organizations for women in medicine. And I think AWAM gave me a lot of confidence that I could be creative around this issue, you know? So, I mean, I think I will continue to pursue advancement in academia, but part of me is impatient with women's lack of progress. And I have a pretty good, you know, 30,000 view on the problems for women in medicine, and I am aware that that is a long and difficult path. So I'm stepping outside and finding other ways to accelerate my career that are a little bit non-traditional, and I think that's kind of the scrappiness that women have to have, and some of those things I've learned through AWAM and other groups like it.
That's great. And how has AWAM potentially translated into greater gender equity in your own workplace?
Well, AWAM has developed some great resources. So, you know, there was a task report. I think the beginning of the whole thing was a task force report that was put out by some of the senior women who would then become future AWAM leaders. and they laid out the needs of women in academia. And that was kind of like a nice statement to put the whole specialty on alert that we were not meeting the needs of women well, even though we wanted a diverse workforce. And then AWAM put out, they were the ones who put out the consensus paper that I worked on, where we developed a body of policies and practices for the specialties to support women in medicine. That was came out in a number of forms, came out as a process paper and also so as a policy supported by ACEP and SAAM. Just general guidelines around the way that workforces should approach building a supportive environment for their female physicians. And of course, every year they put out a great body of didactics supporting women in medicine. And so AWAM works at all levels. You know, they target what do organizations need to know to support their women physicians? What do physicians themselves at all levels, you know, from medical students to residents to junior physicians upwards, what do they need to do to accelerate their careers? Things like how do you build a better promotions packet to how do you negotiate well? So I think they've really built kind of a rich body of resources. It gets better every year, and I think that's one of the reasons they've maintained such a robust membership. Is I think there's a lot of really great concrete resources in there that were never there for women when I was coming early on. You know, when I was coming up in my career early on.
Yeah, and I think we've definitely heard that from a lot of more senior AWAM members. This organization is incredible, but where was it 10 years ago, yeah. And it wasn't there, and that's why we built it. Thanks for that work. I'm going to pivot a little bit to your career. What career accomplishment would you say that you're the most proud of?
I think early on when you go into research, you make this commitment to have your science and knowledge have an impact. And I am not there yet with my individual research. You know, I think that's still an early body of work, and I'm building towards things that I want to accomplish in my research. However, I think because of social media, I've been able to be in a role where I can take other people's science and broadcast that to a wider community that includes that includes people beyond physicians. And so it's been a very new but fulfilling experience for me to sit in that position where I have access to people from sort of journalists to a wide variety of professionals in other fields. And then, of course, health professionals too. And it feels like an accomplishment of sorts to have a much bigger voice in translating science. So I think, I'm not sure that's my biggest accomplishment, but it looms large in my mind right now because we're in an era where there's a lot of skepticism around science. And I'm trying to bring a positive feel to hard science and make it fun and accessible and desirable and really make a case that we need more of it and that we need more support and funding for it and public engagement in it. Every day I see ways in which I fall short of that, but that is the goal. And I feel like at least I'm in this place where I can start doing that more and more. So that feels good to me. I think the other part of feeling like I have more of a public face is that we need more women in STEM fields, you know? And so, I mean, I think specifically a lot of my messaging is about girls and women in STEM and in medicine, and it's to them and it's for them. And so every time I'm approached by a student or a resident or a junior faculty member early in their careers and they're at all encouraged by anything that I've put out there, that to me feels like a tremendous accomplishment because there was so little of it, you know, as I was coming up. And I feel lucky that I had the individual mentorship so that I was able to fall into these fields and not get lost on the wayside. But I know that everybody has that. They just don't happen to run into the right people. So if I can be a little bit of that person for other people, that feels like such an honor, and I would feel lucky to accomplish that.
I would definitely put myself in that category as among people who have looked to you as an example of success. So thank you. How do you anticipate the needs of women in academic emergency medicine, or perhaps medicine in general, are going to evolve in the next 10 years?
I mean, I think we have started with such the basics, you know? I mean, when we first stepped into that room at AWAM, I don't know if anybody else has remembered that. The conversation, a big part of the conversation was around lactation facilities, you know, the lack of lactation facilities in hospitals. And, you know, that is something that is dictated by law, you know. And I think, you know, there's this recent report by the National Academies of Science and Engineering and Medicine, and it talked about how hospitals and healthcare systems and academic institutions are really stalled on litigation, you know. Like, we tend to worry only about gender discrimination, sexual harassment, to the extent that they were worried about legal action. And to me, the lactation facility thing was so basic, it made me sad. To me, those basic things are such a foundation. Like, you can't build up from there. You can't build up from there unless you have it down, you know? So we can't pretend like we have a good working environment for parents of any kind unless first we make sure that women can come back from maternity leave and have a decent physical workplace. And so some of these things were just so obvious and so such a gaping need, and it felt bad to have to start there, you know, but you have to start somewhere. So, I mean, we're so aware of how we're laying down the roughest floor. You know, it's like, I want a beautiful house with, like, gorgeous wood paneling, but actually somebody has to just pour the cement. And so I think we're really aware that we were doing a lot of cement pouring. You know, like, right now the statement, I just wrote a statement for one of my nonprofit organizations that was like, there shouldn't be sexual harassment in the healthcare workplace. Like, that was a fundamental principle, and it was almost laughably basic, you know, and yet huge organizations have not committed to that basic principle. And so I think I'm well aware we are just, we're pouring the cement, and we're pouring the cement on top of just ground clearing, which is what the women who just entered our fields did, you know what I mean? But they laid the foundations for the cement pouring, and now we will step back and our cement has dried, and the next generation will build up from there to really getting the fine metrics that will allow us to track little inequities as they creep in, and hopefully the next generation can do the kind of finessing that will really bring equity and compensation and promotion, and then get women up into leadership roles. I mean, I was trying to identify a number with, I was sitting around a table with a bunch of other women leaders, and we're like, we can't have the motto 50-50 by 2050. And, you know, that's like something that some companies are using by saying we want 50-50 women representation by 2050. And we're like, that is such a distant goal. Like, there is no way we could get, say we were just talking about chair roles. We cannot get a goal like that, you know? It's not going to be in my lifetime. But we can start somewhere. So maybe for women in medicine, it's 20% by a certain date, you know? So I think that's where we're going to start, baby steps. And then at some point, some generation can really see the sea change that we've been dreaming about.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a very long time from now, but maybe better late than never.
Let's stick with that. I like that. Better late than never.
All right. What piece of advice would you give a younger version of yourself or an AWAM member at an earlier stage of her career?
Oh, I think I would just say not to be discouraged. You know, I think there are lots of points where you can feel really held up by the systems that tend to devalue women. I just want to tell junior women that it's not personal and it's not about you, and everything you experience is experienced by women everywhere. I think people tend to internalize and make those things so specific to their experience and feel a lot of guilt and blame and inadequacy. And, you know, the truth is we are enough. And we deserve to be valued just as our male peers are. And it's the same thing for people of color in medicine and those with other differences of any kind, whether it's sexual orientation or gender identity or disability. You know, it's all the same issue, which is that these systems systematically devalue you, and then they tell you that it's you and that you are not worthy of being here. I internalized all those things, and what programs like AWIM are all about is bringing people together in the same room so that they see that these experiences are in fact shared. They're not isolated. And when they're shared, you can start seeing the patterns. And then you can go after the things that are maintaining that pattern of behaviors and inequity. And so I would tell younger physicians to try to find a network so that you can really see that it's not you, and then focus back on your true value and move forward in medicine and bring that to our fields that can be better. That is the vision.
Wonderful advice. Please name three other AWIM members we should consider interviewing, maybe one around your stage, one who's more senior, and one perhaps more junior.
For junior, you should talk to Elizabeth Goldberg and Tracy Manson. Sorry, those are two. For my stage, you're already talking to all the presidents, right? So it should be somebody who's a non-president. And you already talked to Derek Haas?
No.
Oh, you should talk to Derek Haas. Derek Haas is, I consider her a product of AWAM. As she and I got to know each other through AWAM, and she was drawn in because she was nominated for an award that I helped develop. And so she's definitely part of the AWAM lineage and everything that she has built. So Dara is my peer. And then as far as somebody senior, I'm sorry, my brain first goes to all the senior women who have already been presidents, because those are the ones I know so well. Because we have to get Gloria Kuhn and Tracy Sanson and Diane Birnbaumer.
And I don't actually
I have
think
so
they
many more. Are they
presidents.
Not really? No, yeah, actually, Diane has not, and yeah. Tracy has not.
Yeah.
So those are two ones that you won't, those are two that you won't hit.
Perfect.
Automatically.
Thank you so much again for your time, Dr. Esther Chu, on behalf of AWEM.
My pleasure.
Thanks again for tuning in. Join us next week when we chat with the 2019-2020 president of AWEM, Dr. Pooja Agarwal, an expert in global emergency medicine at Yale. See you next time.